CB Shook and Jive.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Jeff Gilder, and I'd just like to say howdy tonight. I hope you all are doing well. We're doing fine here in the North Myrtle Beach studios. If you noticed the backdrop, those of you that are watching us on the video, that we're back in the North Myrtle Beach studios this week. I've had enough of that New York City 34th Avenue and Avenue of the Americas stuff, you know. I got to go back up there one more time, though. I'm going back this weekend to do some stuff, but
we're
back,
sorry.
Back in Myrtle Beach, and so there we are. So I got to work on a couple things here. I can't see Hugh and Jack all of a sudden, so I'll fix that. Take it away, fellas. Say hello to the folks.
Jack, speak.
Well, guys, welcome to Racing Through History, a la the Goat Rodeo, and we're ready for another exciting show tonight. I know Hugh's got a lot to talk about. What you going to talk about tonight, Hugh?
Bowman Gray, a little. A little bit of history, a little bit of current, whatever. Kind of like last week, we'll start out on a subject and just run it till it dies.
I know Bobby's got something over there. I can see that smile on his face.
Kind of like last week.
I know.
It's a surprise.
You know why that is? He doesn't know yet himself.
We always have to play the field to see what seems right. See where the momentum is.
Yep. See what sounds relevant. Of course, I don't know that anything we do is relevant. Jeff running around punching buttons and twisting knobs and looking at monitors, and I don't know whether we've got it, we're on or not. Are we on? Yeah, we're on.
And I don't know what all.
Yeah, and I don't know what all.
All kinds of stuff going on in the studio tonight, guys.
Yep. Yeah, we had one relevant race in NASCAR.
What was the relevant race?
Bell and Bell, vintage modifieds at Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Now, I've been hearing y'all didn't have very many cars. Is that true?
No, that's not. We had a grand total of 19 cars and 20 drivers.
Wow.
We made a good showing at Fayetteville. And especially the Mod and Pro Mod boys put on a hell of a race. They showed them what old-time racing is really about.
Actually, that's the biggest field we've ever had in all of our career. We had hit up there 18, 16 cars.
Been close, tonight.
But 19, we're going to still try to get that magic 20 one of these times. Yep. But yeah, that's we started with two cars a few years ago, and so if we had roughly 20 this time, that's a tenfold increase over the years.
Well, that's a big increase for any kind of series. Y'all are putting more cars on the track. NASCAR is putting less.
Yep, although it's not exponentially, we are still growing. We had one new car Saturday night. And I understand that somebody in our area has bought a car.
Oh, really?
Yep.
There's another car that will be joining the group. It's the the new guy and his car are both from upstate New York. He's moved to our area, and he's running a local campground at Ocean Isle. But he's I don't exactly know how he found out about us, but he's got a, or just recently bought a vintage car and
came to Dublin, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's been to several races.
Now, has he raced before? Or is that
he had raced? I think like street stocks or something like that. Never had vintage cars, but that shouldn't be a big transition. So we keep adding, you know, adding to the field.
Now,
so
which campground is that? That's not the nudist colony, is it?
Why would you be interested in that?
Well, I had a friend that used to run it.
The Apollo, the Apollo Sun Club. That used to be its name.
Y'all know entirely too much about that subject. Both of you.
The Apollo Sun Club. We sun anything.
So I have the stream up now, so the folks on the website can watch the video stream. And I'm sitting here looking at it, and we got some new equipment going on this week. It looks
pretty crisp.
Yeah, it does. Proud of that, man. That looks good. That looks good. So Bell and Bell, it's October. Are you guys? While I was messing around, you may have answered this. Are you guys done for the year? Or do you have more?
Maybe.
That's kind of a moving question.
Is it?
It looks like we are officially done.
Points is over and all that. Right?
That's the way it's looking. We had we only race once a month, and once this year in July we were rained out at one of our host tracks. And racetracks now they have a pretty rigid schedule that they form at the beginning of the year. And if something goes amiss on a given night, they can't just plug it back in to the next time they. So it looks like that we're just going to lose that date. So that's going to remove that one. And also we had a race originally scheduled at Dublin for October the 14th, and it appears that Dublin is going to end their season this coming week on October the 7th. That's according to their website. This will be their final event of the year, so it looks like we're going to lose that one too. When you're sort of an invited guest to a track, you ain't got a whole lot of options you can exercise. If you know, you can only go if they invite you or if they have you. You know, if it don't work out, it don't work. We're not a track class per se, so that doesn't put us in the same category as the weekly guys that are there every time. So we may lose those two dates. It's just a result of circumstance.
And how many races did you actually end up running this year?
Maybe five or
plus,
six.
Plus y'all had one out of series race that you ran.
Yeah, we went to that's two. Right. We went to Lakeview on the right. Labor Day, and the Lakeview has scheduled another race, just another general for November the 18th, which we possibly might go to that.
Well,
could happen.
Some of the cars went to Myrtle Beach one time too. So kind of sort of two races out of class out that weren't on the actual schedule. So we may end up getting in three if we end up going to Lakeview again.
Also, interesting, I kind of knew this but didn't know it officially, but the promoter at Fayetteville, Jim Long, has been working pretty hard behind the scenes in tandem with the folks at Lakeview. He was a big part of their Labor Day race, and he will be also helping to organize this November race. So he's that'll help. He's done an excellent job at Fayetteville this year, so he can help them get extra cars and exposure and so on. So that's always a good. And he's just wants to try to help, like most of us want to. If Lakeview can get going again, that's good. That's just good for racing.
It sure is.
We hate to lose another track.
Yeah, when you lose a track, you lose it forever, anymore, just about.
Yeah, it's all next to impossible to get one back up that's lost its permits, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I had a called Jim Sunday afternoon, had a long conversation, and we talked about everything, but about that sort of thing in particular. And he pointed out that just, you know, the area where Lakeview is, the area where Dublin, those are areas that are not really growing.
Right.
People are moving out of those areas. They just are. You know, people grow up and leave and go somewhere else. There's just not a lot of there's not a lot of population growth, or a lot of
a lot of jobs.
Yeah, it's just a reality. Yeah.
The area where the Lakeview track is was devastated in that last hurricane.
Yeah, that's true.
There are many, 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 many houses and businesses that are just boarded up. They're not habitable.
Yeah, so all of that, is all contributes to, to being a big challenge to bring something like that back. But at the same time, it's still worth the effort to try to do something there. No one knows at this point what Lakeview's future might be, but at least there's it might be something. It might have a future. I think that's the key thing, is there might be some kind of activity, which beats nothing. So we want.
Well, the last time we were there, Mr. Miller admitted that he missed it, and that he would like to continue on in some form or fashion, which was not the impression that I had previous to that.
Does that mean he's going to have like special events? Is that kind of the feeling y'all get?
That's the feeling I get after talking with Jim Long, that maybe monthly or special events, or I don't know that any track, as a general statement, can hardly hang with weekly races anymore.
That's pretty tough.
Especially in the areas that those tracks are, they would be much better served to sit down in the back room somewhere without telling anybody they've actually done it. And, okay, you race this weekend, and I'll race next weekend, and so forth and so on through the summer. And next summer, we'll still do the every other weekend. We'll just switch who has which weekend. That way it's fair for everybody. But they're just... doesn't seem to be the interest both in racers and fans, but it seems like if you do split it up a little bit, you end up with a better car count and better fan attendance than if you try to work on the same race on the same weekend that another track's running.
I don't think that ever worked anywhere.
No.
I really don't. There might be isolated cases where it looked like it was working for a little while, but I think as a general statement.
Well, there
that
are
never work.
Individual tracks. Bowman Gray has done it successfully, but they don't have any competition. There's nothing else around them to siphon the cars off.
You know, another thing, Jack, forever, it's kind of an anomaly. The Myrtle Beach proper area has lots of people that come in the summer, obviously, but not necessarily lots of race fans.
Right.
They don't come to Myrtle Beach because of racing.
Well, Bobby, back through the years, thinking back, I've had several people that I've talked to just at the track, in the stands from time to time. They say they never knew there was a racetrack there. Now, I don't know how anybody could not, because they had Busch Grand National races and all that kind of stuff, but I guess if you're not looking for it, you don't know.
But it's always been a challenge to get.
Yeah.
There's so much entertainment.
Oh, yeah, that's entertainment dollar.
All kinds of
here,
competition.
It's hard to. There's just a lot of competition for the entertainment business, although there's a lot of people here. So it's kind of a trade-off.
Plus, the weekend tends to be the turnaround time for the vacationers.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes it even harder for a vacationer to come to the race on Saturday night.
Well, somebody either got here or left Saturday. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I moved here, I knew about it, because when I was coming back and forth from here, Dale Jr. had been racing there.
Yes.
You know, as he was coming up, and so I looked for it, and I was excited to go there and see a race there. You know, but I think a lot of things have changed completely in the market. You know, you just think about it. The fans are different, man. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just
absolutely.
The biggest thing is what you all mentioned it. The competition for time is the biggest competitor for anything nowadays. I mean, it's people just got a lot of choices.
Well, yeah. And this is something that we've talked about a lot, and I really don't understand it. But I went to a monster truck thing there this summer, and it was packed. I mean, it reminded me of the old racing days, and the only explanation I've got is just people have taste have changed, interest have changed with the different generations that are different than we were.
Well, the monster truck people have done a good job promoting their series to little kids. Bob, you well know that, but the little kids don't know what NASCAR is. They don't know anything about the racing that we grew up with.
Right.
I don't know whether their parents and grandparents haven't exposed them to it, or whether the monster truck people have done a better job of promoting.
Well, when you see a monster truck, you know it's something different. It's coming down the highway on a trailer or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's usually on a trailer. It's not usually enclosed.
But the other thing,
like NASCAR started out.
Yes.
If you take a 3-year-old kid, though, to a 500-mile race, you're going to have problems.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get bored.
Yeah.
You take them to a monster thing, they will be entertained. It is, they've got that going for them. I mean, it's the nature of the beast. It's a short program. It's easy to understand. Kids love it, and you know, it's all of that, combined to make that popular. And something else to compete with.
And NASCAR has become too long and too complicated for not only the little kids but the Generation Xers. Their attention span is far, far, far shorter than ours was, and with all the rules changes and everything, the races are almost boring, even to us old race fans.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of that comes back to you got to make heroes out of your drivers, too.
Yep.
You know, that's one thing like the Car Series is doing. They're
big.
Promoting their drivers.
That's real big.
I mean, you know, back when we were growing up, Bobby, and you, you looked in the – we didn't have Facebook, obviously, but we had the newspaper, and the newspaper always had articles about who won and
pictures.
Earl Moss did this from Creedmoor, North Carolina, and that
pictures.
Kind of thing. Made pictures and made people kind of get interested. You don't have that.
And
you got to go looking for it now.
And there were racing papers. What was it that was published in Winston? Southern Motor Racing for years.
Southern Motorsports Journal also.
Yeah, there were two of them there for a while.
In years and years and years they were published. And I know I started subscribing to it in the 60s and used to just almost run home to get it on Thursdays or whatever day.
Came every other Thursday.
Yeah, that's right, every other Thursday. Didn't come out every Thursday.
Right, every other Thursday.
And you did just...
Seemed like it quit during the winter.
Yank it open and
for a little while.
They took a little bit of a layoff in the winter.
Yeah. It just wasn't.
And then several years later, they went to weekly. But
they were around before NASCAR was a household name. Before it was a big deal.
Well, Southern Motor Racing started in 1962. Southern Motorsports Journal started in 1962. Southern Motor Racing News started in 1964.
And I think I started subscribing to Southern Motor Racing in like 67, and 66 or 67, and that was just you read every word of it every time it came out, but then NASCAR racing was on a steep uphill climb at the time, and it became more and more popular when. What, the 70s that Reynolds Tobacco Company started putting money into it?
But just think of those papers back in the 60s.
The Cup Series was a big part of it, but there was a heck of a lot about short track racing.
Oh, yes.
In there.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of times the front cover was short track. Brown winning something.
Yep.
Columbia Speedway got a lot of coverage in those newspapers. That's how I knew about it and knew all the drivers there. I never went there but one time, but I knew everything
about it. Exactly.
Yeah, because of those racing papers.
And if you had an opportunity to go to Columbia, you would have probably gone to the racetrack because already knew part about, you know.
Well, I got to go one time, and I knew everything that was going on. You knew all the drivers and everything.
Mm-hmm. Danny Whitener just mentioned another one, National Speed Sport.
National Speed Sport News and Illustrated Speedway News.
Yep.
Great papers. I subscribed to both.
And then there was Stock Car Racing Magazine come out there in the mid-60s. That wasn't just sort of the Bible of sorts. I would read them things from cover to cover.
I did too. Every time I got one, cover to cover.
Just cover to cover.
Yep. Even Sports Illustrated had one issue a year that was devoted almost exclusively to racing. That was a big deal. And Sports Illustrated was a big magazine then, back in those days. That was my 15 minutes of fame. I made the centerfold on that magazine.
Did you have your clothes on?
Yep, I did.
That's good. Mr. October.
Yep, I was in Atlanta, and the big deal then was Jeff Gordon, and we were introducing the drivers. Our stage was a Cracker Barrel storefront, and we were ushering Jeff Gordon through the swinging doors at front of the Cracker Barrel. My boss and I were opening the doors to let the drivers through, and I got a letter in the mail, or a big envelope. It said, everybody gets 15 minutes of fame, and this is yours. he had copied the centerfold and sent it to me.
Well, Jack, at one time you had every stock car racing magazine there was, didn't you?
I've got every one from the beginning up to about probably the early 90s.
Winston Cup Scene was, of course, it came along later on, but that was a big deal. And they, of course, by then they were big color pictures, and
the internet took them out.
Yeah,
they lasted until the internet started.
Well, the internet's taken a lot of print media out.
So. Yeah, they came. They were weekly Winston Cup Scene. It was a thick publication.
Yeah, that was a big thing. And I took that for a number of years, and every time it came, I pour through that. Of course, then I was working at several of the racetracks, so I was looking to see if the pre-race shows got any any coverage.
Publicity.
We got some really good coverage.
I was a dealer for them. You could order them and sell them. You know, you would get. I got 10 a week, and then the original deal was you sent back to them for credit just the cover of the ones that you didn't sell. And after a little while, they got where they wouldn't give them more credit. You know, you could tell the things were tightening up. Yeah, that was in the mid-90s. But people would come in, they would read them, but they wouldn't buy them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jack?
Yes, sir?
Did you bring a Carolina Race Place historic race finish this week?
Nah, yeah, of course I did. Of course I did.
Where are we going this week, man?
We are going up. Well, first of all, we're going to stay in 1964.
Okay.
Which was a good year.
I was 9.
Me too.
Well,
turned 10.
Well, y'all might not remember this particular race.
9. Never mind.
Wrangley Field Speedway, Hampton, Virginia. On Saturday night, August 22nd, 1964. A 100-lap modified sportsman race was held on the 0.4-mile Langley Field dirt track in Hampton, Virginia. During time trials, Red Foot of Southington, Connecticut, won the pole position with a lap of 21.04 seconds. Starting on the outside front row for the feature race would be Gene Lovelace of Newport News, Virginia. There were two 10-lap heat races before the 100-lapper. The first heat race was won by Al Grennan of Fredericksburg, Virginia.
This was Grennan's first ever race at Langley Field. News reports have no mention of who won the second 10-lap heat race, so we're out in the cold on that one. When the 100-lap feature race got underway, Redfoot quickly took the lead. There were early caution flags on lap 1 and lap 3. When the race was restarted, Redfoot continued to hold the lead. Foot led the remaining 97 laps, I guess it's 97 laps, but was challenged hard by Gene Lovelace for the final 50 laps. Redfoot won $1,000 for the victory. This was Foot's fourth race win of the season to date at Langley. He lapped every car in the race except the second and third finisher. Couple side notes I made. Gene Lovelace won the modified track championship at Langley in 1964. He finished the season 4 points ahead of Redfoot. Redfoot retired from racing in 1980 after running his final race, of all places, at Langley Speedway in a sportsman car. So here's the way they finished. August 22nd, 1964, Langley Field Speedway. The winner, driving the number 8, Redfoot, Southington, Connecticut, followed by Gene Lovelace, Newport News, Virginia, Earl Moss, Creedmoor, North Carolina, the final car on the lead lap, Al Grennan, Fredericksburg, Virginia, Eddie Krause, Glenn Allen, Virginia, Ralph Rose, Norfolk, Virginia, Frank Burnham, South Mill, North Carolina, Jenny Adams, Richmond, Virginia, Bill Cowart, Norfolk, Virginia, coming in 10th, Bob Williams, Newport News, Virginia, followed by Jim Bray, Newport News, Virginia, Gene Hartsog, Virginia Beach, Virginia, Butch Torrey, Hampton, Virginia, J.B. Meads, Portsmouth, Virginia, Raymond Rowland, Elizabeth City, North Carolina, came in 15th, followed by Charlie Brown, wonder if that was a made-up name, don't know where he's from, Eddie Williams, Newport News, Virginia, Bud Elliott, Petersburg, Virginia, O.B. Elliott, Emporia, Virginia, coming in 20th, Bruce Warren, Norfolk, Virginia, followed by Bill Lowry, Earl Prangle, Norfolk, Virginia, and coming in 23rd, the final car in the race, Brian Yates, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And Bobby, Brian Yates, I was wondering if that was Doug Yates.
I wonder, because both from Chapel Hill.
It's not, though. It's not.
All right.
He was in a sportsman car. I wonder if it's his brother or cousin or something.
Yeah, that would be safe to assume.
But it was not Doug Yates.
No, I'm sure it wouldn't be, but it might be related to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I bet it was related. Chapel Hill had to be.
Bud Elliott, they're finishing in 18th, is Elliott Sadler.
Yep.
His uncle, Hermie and Elliott Sadler.
Yep.
And obviously that's who Elliott's named after. But he was from the Wilkes of North Carolina area, raced there quite a bit.
Yep.
So.
But a lot of these guys were the same guys that raced down here in Myrtle Beach. They tow down here, which was a heck of a tow when you were flat towing a race car.
Gene Lovelace, wasn't he killed in a wreck?
I'm thinking about Ray Platt. Yeah, you're thinking about Ray Platt.
Frankie Burnham came here one time.
Yeah, Frankie Burnham was here. Bob Williams, I think, was here.
Butch Torrey
was here several times.
Earl Moss, of course, was here a lot.
Earl Moss was track champion here.
Was that in the 300?
Probably was.
This was 364. Before that was number 3.
Yeah, this was in the 300 era.
Yes, that was 300 era for sure. And Ralph Rose in the Z1.
Yeah, and Langley was probably dirt in 64.
Oh, yeah, it was dirt. 4/10 mile dirt.
Yeah, probably dirt.
Danny Whitener just posted RIP Robert Yates.
We lost
Robert.
Passed away this week.
Yep.
So anyway, that's the way she was in Langley. And Langley is still in business.
Yeah. On the Robert Yates thing, we would be remiss not to talk about that tonight. He passed away yesterday after a lengthy illness with liver cancer. His son Doug released that information late yesterday. But that's really, I mean, that is sad. That is one of the last living, well, not living, but connections to NASCAR's golden era.
Old-time racers.
Yeah.
That, of course, Bobby and I talked about that today. Don't know that Robert ever did much, if any, racing himself. But he had to be one of the, in the golden age, one of the premier engine builders.
He sure built a lot of engines.
And I had the good fortune to go to tech school with Robert Yates. We never were close friends, but we certainly knew one another. Robert Yates, Tim Brewer, and I, all three were schoolmates.
His father was a minister, Robert Yates, and he had a twin brother named Richard. His parents never encouraged all this racing activity, but he pursued it anyway. I mean, he was just had a knack for mechanical things and just kept on going. That was a common, if you read through the early NASCAR, that was almost common that nobody's parents
encouraged them.
Unlike today, where parents start putting their kids in go-karts when they're 2 years old.
Yeah, pushing them.
Yeah, back in that era.
And writing big checks as they get older.
Mm-hmm. Back in those days, that was hardly the case. Parental, and it was the opposite.
If you wanted to get in racing, you better be good enough to make it on your own and make your own way. Because in most cases, the most help you got from home was your parents tolerated it.
Robert Yates, his timing was, you know, he come up in that era where he wasn't long before he got connected with Holman and Moody.
Yep.
You know, which was, they had unlimited resources and technical abilities, and you could just make stuff, anything you could make up, you could think of, you could just about manufacture it at Holman and Moody. And a guy like that was, you know, that was a kid in a candy store. He really honed his skills. And, during that part of his career. Then, you know, I guess it was in the 70s when that Harry Rainier team, remember, it was originally Lenny Pond was the driver, the Wynn Incorporated number 54. Ultimately, Robert Yates would buy that team. You know, the Rainier, a few years later, they took on a partner who was, it was Rainier Lundy, and then things started going sideways, and Robert Yates, who had never been a car owner or a team owner, bought the team.
Danny Whitener says he ran a dirt late model while he was building engines.
That doesn't surprise me. Most people that are successful in racing have gotten into it. Some of the, you know, crew chief, racer, both. But they've been at the tracks with their hands dirty. Which is the basis for a lot of their learning.
He was from the era where you didn't have computers and engineers. Right.
You just did stuff by the seat of your pants. You had enough ingenuity about you, not engineering, but ingenuity about you, to see a problem and be able to see what, in your opinion, it would take to fix it.
You know. Robert Yates and Waddell Wilson were like colleagues that went along a similar path and had similar results. You know, they both went to the highest levels of, you know, of NASCAR. But that's going to, you know, there's not many, if any, of these guys still among us now. There's very, very few. Robert Yates was certainly one of them.
Yep.
And now, you know, we've lost him. So
big. Bud Moore is still around. I don't know that he's really doing anything other than being retired, but at least he's still with us.
So, Danny, you're saying that I remember Chuck Piazza running there at Concord in the Charlotte area back in the day. That was a Robert Yates-owned car. Is that? Chuck Piazza was one of the test pilots with a Chrysler kit car. And they run.
He was also, for a short time, track motor at Columbia Speedway.
Hmm. So. All right.
You always wonder what if, when I graduated from tech school and all the rest of us did, I came very, very close to driving to Ronda, North Carolina, and pulling up in front of Junior Johnson's spread and say, here I am, I'll sweep floors, I'll do whatever it takes to get in the door. And fate took me in a different direction. I didn't do it.
Yeah, you could have hung with Brewer. Think what would have happened to you then.
I'd have won.
You could have been a Hugh Brewer.
You could have been stealing lawnmowers and stuff.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I was always a better student than he was. So you always wonder what if. But then if a frog had wings.
Oh, well, I shouldn't have said that. But I did.
You know,
that was
Robert
sort of his
Yates,
downfall.
He didn't have them. There was still all kinds of ups and downs when he got when he purchased that team with Davey Allison driving and everything. They had tremendous success, but also incredible tragedy.
Yeah.
In the midst of everything, you know, Davey Allison was killed in the helicopter crash, and then they got Ernie Irvin going, and then he almost got killed in the race car.
Yep.
Well. Davey almost killed himself at the All-Star race in Charlotte. Yeah. He walked to Victory Circle because his car was just a wad. They couldn't even load it on a wrecker. They put it on a rollback.
So you know, it was not a storybook type of career for Robert Yates. It certainly was a real life ups and downs, all kinds of mountaintops and valley type of experience.
Well, Davey was always a checkers or wreckers driver, yeah. Anyway.
You know, who knows what NASCAR would look like if Davey Allison had a normal length career.
Yeah.
Yep. Jeff, you've got a comment directed to you on Facebook, I see.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So,
let me go check that out. So, they're not cussing me, are they?
No. It's nice. It's not bad. So,
cool. Cool. All right, Bopper, where are you taking us tonight, buddy? Do you know yet?
Well, there's getting back to one of my old original interests, ghost tracks.
Yes.
How about that? How about
I had a guy ask me, a friend of mine down in South Georgia, Jimmy Ropey, asked me about if we're going to talk about ghost tracks anymore.
This is one that's actually on our website on the Racers Reunion. It's the lead off on the newest post, and I didn't start it. Our old buddy Johnny Maloney did.
Yep.
Stock Island Speedway.
And where was that?
That was basically in Key West, Florida, believe it or not. Key West, which has not got much land. It was
must have been half on the beach.
Yeah, half. It was on, there's a little island there called Stock Island, and they had a half-mile racetrack back in. The reason that I know about it, that's why this kind of struck me, is because my Shallotte, where I'm from, has all, and it still has, a shrimping culture. There's guys in our area that are still shrimp boats. Got, you know, they're still shrimpers. They to this very day, bless their heart, they talk about that's worse than racing to try to make a living shrimping.
That's a tough way to make a living.
But there are those that it's just steeped and they just love it. It's in the, you know, it's just in the blood, and they will not quit shrimping. And this is not just started, but when I was a kid, it was perhaps a bigger industry than it is now, and I had some friends. I had several friends who we always knew about Key West in Shallotte from the shrimping connection, because there was certain times of the year the shrimpers would go. You could shrimp there almost year-round. The rest of the time it's further up the coast, it's more seasonal. But in Key West it was almost 12 months of the year. It was a different kind of shrimp, but you could do it all the time. So we had people in the area that went there. And eventually, some of them just moved there. They just never came back to Shallotte. They just lived in. So we had, I've never been to Key West, but I know a lot about it because I've kind of lived vicariously through friends and family that actually did. And typically what would happen was a family would move, they would live in Key West in the summer and come back home in the winter. And we had a friend like this back in the 60s, and we was all kids then, and he got to telling us about he would make a cart, you know, these kind of homemade soapbox derby things, and they would coast them down the hill at a warehouse to loading dock, and they put wooden roll bars and stuff on them, and they would get in big wrecks. And then he said after that his daddy took the soapbox derby and took it over to a local racetrack and pulled him around the track with a car. Pulled him with a car around the racetrack in a homemade soapbox car, wagon wheels.
There's a lady went to jail for doing something similar to that about a month ago, yeah. I saw.
Well, this is in like 1963, so nobody cared. Nobody was, you know, there wasn't a pulling your son in a car police.
Well, we used to race them on 32nd Avenue in Myrtle Beach, but we
never was pulled by a car.
Never pulled by a car. The big thing was getting a good pusher.
Yeah, which was pushers some of your friends.
Yeah, pushers were in hard demand.
Yeah, which was always your friend.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have any heels either.
That's right.
Y'all had about as many as we had, which was none. So they didn't have any in Key West either, so they used the family car. And so they went to this racetrack. His name was Ronnie Leonard. This guy was our friend. And he said his daddy would put him around the track. Well, I didn't put all this together until 50 years later that this, where he was being drug around the track was this thing that Johnny Mallon, he's talking about, the Stock Island Speedway. If you look at Johnny's post, it is on there. I found part of it. I found it on Google Earth. Part of it you can still see it. But it just gives you a different perspective of what property values and tourism and all of that was in the 1960s compared to now. There's no way in the world land on the Florida Keys would be turned into a racetrack.
Oh, yeah.
Now, would it?
No.
Holy moly.
Well, Stock Island was where the hurricane came in, wasn't it?
Probably was.
Wasn't that the first place it made landfall, the Florida hurricane?
Stock Island is between Key West and the mainland, but it's like the next island
to. I believe that's where it hit. So the track may be a goldfish bowl.
But I was... here's some air. If you go to Johnny's post, here's some pictures of
what,
the speedway.
What size was
it? It was a half mile.
A half mile in Key West?
Yeah, half mile paved.
It must have been from
coast to coast.
Right, yeah, coast to coast track.
It might have been the road that went across the island.
I mean, look at that. If you run off one end, you went into the ocean.
Yeah.
But I mean, look at
like racing at Daytona on the beach.
Look at the stands and stuff.
Yeah, wow.
It's pretty cool. 1965, yeah. See this view of the stands?
Wow.
That looks better than stuff today does.
Yeah.
In the 50s, they used to run the Soapbox Derby races at Bowman Gray Stadium. They used scaffolding, and they built a great big ramp complete with an elevator big enough to haul two soapbox racers up about, I don't know, 30, 40 feet. And they'd come down that ramp and use the front stretch for their race. And the track start-finish line was the finish line for the soapbox racers.
It looked like the infield had a big pond in it, the center field at Stock Island.
It was just graded out below sea level.
That's probably what it was.
And filled in.
On a real high tide, the race would be flooded out.
There's lots of places down the lower part of Florida that's that way. On high tide, you can get
race,
your ankles wet.
Race flooded out. Looks like Stock Island had a waterlogged backstretch and an infield without guardrails. So, that was pretty cool. I kind of knew about it without knowing where, you know, without knowing about it. So this is somebody's, this happens, I just looking through this, or I found my own post.
That's strange when that happens.
Hey, I done this. I drew this map that someone has graciously borrowed and put it on there.
Probably Johnny. You know how those Georgia boys are.
Yes, see, now this current photo, there you can see the old, I don't know if that's the first and second turn or three and four, but there's this big, these big buildings, probably apartments in the middle of it. Stock Island was paved because Florida don't have no clay. They don't even have any dirt. It's just coral and, you know, stuff like that. So she was a paved speedway running in the 1960s. So that's our weekly ghost track.
That's cool, man.
So are we going to start having ghost tracks more often again,
well,
Bobby?
We could.
We could if we can find any more.
All that's old is new again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, a lot of people never heard of, like, Jacksonville Speedway and places like that. So.
Here's a guy on Johnny's post said in the early 50s I was in the Navy stationed at Key West, and being a young racer I wanted to race, so when the people wanted to build a racetrack I was right there. I raced at Stock Island Speedway the opening day. And for about 2 years, then I got discharged and went north, loved the track.
Who posted that?
I don't know what his name is. Here's another one. Although I grew up in Michigan, I was born in Key West, Florida, and still have a lot of family down in the Keys. My grandfather raced at the old Stock Island Speedway back in the day and held a championship or two. My grandmother, as well, raced in the powder puff division there. My pop's name was Cecil Black and drove what I believe was an old Ford, white, number 54, with an old flathead V8.
I'm not sure I ever heard of Stock Island Speedway.
Well, see, you've learned
now
something.
Now you have.
There have been many a thing come across this show I'd never heard of. Exactly.
Well, that surprises me that you haven't, though.
I haven't.
You just haven't been associated with as many old guys like us.
Now, what year was it running, Bobby?
In the 60s that I know of.
Mid-60s?
I would say, yes, 60. Yeah. These pictures that Johnny has on here is from 65.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, they had a announcing tower, pagoda, stand, everything. Ooh. She was a modern speedway right there in Margaritaville.
Until the high tide came in and cut your ankles wet.
Yeah, so, all right, ladies and
gentlemen. All right, it's time for Hugh's Views on the News.
Well, I'm going back to 64.
It's been a 64 night. We love 64.
On purpose. On purpose.
Hold that up. What are you looking in? Not to me, to the camera.
It's actually a program dated edition 14, 2016, official weekly program, Bowman Gray Stadium, Winston-Salem. But the what makes this one interesting is kind of sort of in the middle. There's almost two full pages of track winners.
Oh, cool.
At Bowman Gray, dated from 1949 on. But
you're not going to read them all, are you?
Hell no. The print's too fine. Have trouble enough as it is. But I thought I would read you 64. Some of the names on here will be familiar, and some of them are not. Jack thought it was kind of funny. There's a fella on here called, let's see, where is he? Yeah, Rain Out.
Yeah, he won 3 weeks.
Yeah, he won at least three. He won at least three in 64. But I thought I would just read you the race winners. This first one is, the date is 3/30. All these are 64. Marvin Panch, Grand National. That's back when in 64 they were still running Grand Nationals, which is became Winston Cup, which is now, what do they call it, Monster Energy Cup or whatever. But anyway, they were still running Grand National races at Bowman Gray on a little quarter-mile paved track. 4/18, Paul Radford. 4/25, Ken Rush. Oh, there's Mr. Rainout, 5/2. 5/9, Buren Skeen. 5/16, Pee Wee Jones. 5:23, Pee Wee Jones again. 5:30, Buren Skeen. 6:06, Ken Rush. 6:13, Ken Rush. 6:20, Perk Brown. 6:27, Ken Rush. 7:04, Ken Rush. 7:11, Pee Wee Jones. There's 7:18, Mr. Rainout again. 7:25, Carl Burris. 8:01, Perk Brown. 8:08, Carl Burris.
You don't like Carl Burris.
I don't like. If you'd ever watched him drive, you wouldn't either. He was a dirty driver. 8:18, Ken Rush. 8:22, Junior Johnson, Grand National. And then it just says Billy Hensley. I assume that they had a modified race as well as the Grand National race that night. So cool. that's the weekly winners for the 64 season. And lots of names on there that we hear on a regular basis on Jack's stuff.
Who were some of the winners in 1949?
All right, I'll just read the names. Fonnie Flock, Joe Eubanks, Curtis Turner, Tim Flock, Pap White, Curtis Turner, Tim Flock. Those were the winners of the 49 season.
That's cool. Well, good stuff.
The Flocks had a...
Yeah, they sort of had a lock on the market. Flock
wins.
Yeah.
Flock
of wins.
Well, I'm sure that if we get up a little bit, we'll get to the Myers Brothers reign if you come up a few years, because they certainly dominated Bowman Gray for many years.
Yeah.
It's interesting to kind of look through that and see who was winning when, and some of the drivers had a really long history of wins throughout the years.
All right, cool beans, guys. We got anything else to do tonight, or can we get out of here early?
Well, condolences to everybody in Las Vegas. Condolences to everybody in Puerto Rico, Texas, Florida.
It's been a tough fall.
And Tom Petty.
Yes, we lost Tom Petty.
Is that for sure?
Well,
because it was posted that he did die, and then it was posted that was fake news. And
Fox News had announced it on their national program. And late this afternoon, I was listening to a local radio station, I guess out of Myrtle Beach. I don't know. Anyway, Myrtle Beach, Wilmington. And they had a Tom Petty memorial afternoon. About every other song was something of Tom Petty's. Sad, 66 years old. Apparently, apparent heart attack. And I liked Tom Petty. He was one of the founding fathers of the ugly can be successful. Mick Jagger, what's his name with Aerosmith, Tom Petty.
He was good.
Yep. Yeah, Tom Petty's work always had something to say. There was always a story with it. And I think he wrote most of his own stuff, or a lot of it anyway.
Yeah.
And it usually had some sort of a story behind it. If you cared to research it a little bit, ask a few questions, read up a little bit.
All right. So we're going to check on out a couple minutes early, folks. Thanks for hanging in there with us. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to you guys for providing some content for the show tonight. We always appreciate that. And as always, we'd like to say thanks to the men and women that serve in our military. Thank you so much for doing what you do so that we can do this. To each and every one of you, good night, and God bless all of you.